No matter how hard the philosophers have tried, it doesn't go away. No matter how hard the psychologists have tried, it doesn't go away. And no matter how theologians try to deal with it in all of its profound implications, it does become one of the most felt struggles of the human life.
What is Dr. Ravi Zacharias speaking about when he says that philosophers, psychologists, and theologians have all dealt with the problem he is considering today? What is it that remains a deep struggle for every human being? Well, stay with us for today's Let My People Think weekly radio program, and we'll hear Dr. Ravi Zacharias explore a subject that he calls the haunting specter of guilt. We're glad you're listening and are confident that studying with Dr. Zacharias for the next half hour will stimulate your mind and spirit, as well as be an encouragement for you. Ravi is an internationally known educator and Christian apologist. He has committed his life to taking the message of Jesus Christ to thinkers and decision makers of the world. Ravi Zacharias International Ministries is fulfilling a God-given role by speaking to philosophical issues and joining the cultural battle for the mind. Ravi uniquely combines evangelism with Christian apologetics as a vehicle for the Holy Spirit to open the windows of the mind to God's eternal truths. Have you ever been victimized by fear? Have you known someone who's been handicapped by fear? Terrifying and horrible to have to live with, but guilt concealed by fear is totally unbearable. Today, Ravi Zacharias explains why such a situation is unbearable as he concludes his three-part message, The Haunting Specter of Guilt.
First, we see guilt expelled by irreverence. Guilt expelled by irreverence. And when you analyze that, you will find out it is plainly unlivable. If guilt is constantly expelled by irreverence, you will find out it is plainly unlivable. Remember in the very first book of the Bible, when Cain has murdered his brother Abel, and God comes to him and says, "Where is your brother Abel?" And Cain says, "Am I my brother's keeper? I don't know where he is." He had already murdered him. And God says to Cain, he says, "Cain, you're going to be a restless wanderer the rest of your life because the voice of your brother's blood is crying out of the ground to me." Cain was trying to expel his sense of guilt by irreverence. "I don't know where he is and I don't care. He is not my responsibility." Guilt expelled by irreverence is unlivable. Second is guilt smothered by pride, and it is unjustifiable. Guilt smothered by pride, it is unjustifiable. You remember how Saul in the Old Testament, every time the prophet came up to him and said, "Saul, why did you do this?" Saul tried to do a quick two-step out of the situation and said, "I'm sorry, I've played the fool." He didn't say, "I've sinned." "I'm sorry, I've played the fool." Because he'd become so arrogant and so proud, he was not going to admit his own guilt. Have you ever tried to see people who've been accused of certain things stand up in front of the camera and admit it? Richard Dorch, who was Jim Baker's colleague, and by the way, I really don't say any of this judgmentally. I have no idea of trying to set the record straight and that the balances were straightened out after all. No. We're human. We all live with struggles. But there was something so sad about that. It just piled betrayal upon betrayal upon betrayal. It was almost the cannibalizing of the souls of people, as R.C. Sproul said. And I say to you, it was so tragic, but Richard Dorch did an interview with Christianity Today before he went into prison that I think was the most straightforward interview of them all. He was Jim Baker's colleague. And he says, "You know what happened to us? We became too drunk with our own importance. We never prayed anymore before we went on for the program." And then he told the Christianity Today interviewer, he said, "You know, I would sit on those front lines and watch ordinary human beings come to be interviewed and within a matter of minutes in front of that television camera turn into petty potentates. Because there were limousines waiting for them, big love offering checks given to their personal names and their own addition and their wealth ever increasing without any accountability to anyone. And somehow you were longing to see one of them on television put his head down in shame and say, 'I was wrong. I have betrayed my wife. I have betrayed you. I have betrayed the laws of the land. I beg your forgiveness. To jail I'm going, but I want you to know I've got a broken heart. I have sinned.'" You longed to see. Maybe the cynic would not have believed it, but certainly, whether we believe it or not, if it is genuine, it ought to happen. But we are too proud to admit that. Abraham Lincoln said this, and maybe someday some politician needs to reread this when he takes the highest office, or all our politicians need to read it. He said it in 1863. And by the way, only in recent times I have studied the spiritual pilgrimage of Abraham Lincoln too, and how marvelously he had come to that personal faith in Christ. True Blood has written a tremendous story on that. But here's what he says in 1863. We have been preserved these many years in our land in peace and prosperity. We have grown in numbers, wealth, and power as no other nation has ever grown. But we have forgotten the gracious hand which preserved us in peace and multiplied and enriched and strengthened us. And we have vainly imagined in the deceitfulness of our hearts that all these blessings were produced by some superior wisdom and virtue of our own. Intoxicated with unbroken success, we have become too self-sufficient to feel the necessity of redeeming and persevering grace, too proud to pray to the God that made us. R.C. Sproul's Table Talk has got an article called One Nation Above God. Let's think of it individually. Is it possible that somebody here is too proud to admit that he or she has sinned? Guilt that is expelled by irreverence is unlivable. Guilt smothered by pride is unjustifiable. And thirdly, guilt that is concealed by fear is unbearable. Guilt concealed by fear is unbearable. And that's where I see this woman at the well, an ordinary woman. I strongly suspect, I know it's guessing, but in the kind of times in which she lived, I suspect she was a victim time and time and time again by somebody who maybe never wanted to treat or respect her well. I don't know. Maybe the other end of the argument is right. Who knows? But knowing in that setting, I strongly suspect she was a woman nobody respected anymore. She was refuse, ethnically, morally, and in every sense of the term, she was a reject in society. And I have no doubt at all in my mind, when Jesus asked her to go and call her husband, she must have for a moment just had that sense of fear that came into her heart, and immediately she spilled out the words, I don't have any. And then when Jesus came back and said, you've told the truth, you've had five, and the one you're living with now is not your husband, immediately there may have been a sense of fear that came, saying, what is he going to do to me? Is the word going to be spread around? Fear. I have seen young people particularly victimized by this. Possibly one of the darkest shadows of our time is the shadow of some form of abuse that children have lived with. Let me give you the classic one and move to my final thought, the answer here, the guilt that can be dealt with. Speaking in a school that I shall leave unnamed, miles and miles away from here, and I'd finished speaking at an assembly, and I don't do high schools too much anymore, in fact, haven't done one in a long time. But nervously, I accepted this invitation because they wanted me to and put a lot of pressure. I decided to talk, not sure the young people would even listen. They're hard to hold their attention. And after the last day, I said, look, I've got a little while before I leave for the airport. If any one of you is really troubled about something, I'll be in one of the offices here. And I put a sheet of paper outside, take 25 minutes apiece. Would you sign your name? And I'll see you one at a time. Talk for 25 minutes, take a 5-minute break, another 25. Within a matter of moments, the sheet was filled up. And the first to come in was a young girl, lovely in her youth, looking so demure, not wanting to say very much. She began to talk, and she began to talk about a friend of hers who was suicidal, a friend of hers who just could not bear to face life anymore, a friend of hers who was brokenhearted, and she went on and on. I said, look, I'm willing to listen, but I want to make sure you are talking about what you came here to talk for. Did you really come to talk about this person? And I said, let me call her Karen now. I said, did you really come to talk about Karen? She said, why do you ask? I said, I cannot believe with all the needs around and the slate filling up so soon that you have actually come to talk about this friend and talking in such vague terms. She said, Ravi, you're right. And then paused, and then this girl in the flower of her youth bent her head and broke down and cried and just sobbed and sobbed her heart out. I felt terrible because evidently a nerve had been touched, but I didn't know if I'd hurt in the process, which was not my intention. And after the tears were wiped away, she told me the story. I won't go into the details. It's horrible. Suffice to say it in one sentence. She had been from the age of 7 paternally molested. She described the hell at night when she'd like tried to bring the dresser against the door as she heard footsteps. And I looked at this fragile life, mangled emotionally, broken, living in such fear that her home was going to break up if she ever told her mom and if the police were ever brought into it. And as I looked at that, ladies and gentlemen, there was another thought that haunted me as I left that morning, and I've never forgotten that story. Here was a woman deluged with agony for 11 years of her life. She was in untold agony. But out of fear for what somebody was going to say, what was going to happen to her life, she had smothered it, which is exactly the kind of fear many young people live with, and it's unbearable. Guilt expelled by irreverence is unlivable. Guilt smothered by pride is unjustifiable. Guilt concealed by fear is unlivable. The only option is guilt that surrenders to grace, which is forgivable. How nice to know, how nice to know that there is a cross. There is a cross as the centerpiece of the Christian message. And only those who understand sin and its agony understand the meaning of the cross. If you don't understand sin, the cross becomes a mockery and something to be laughed at, which is exactly what happened to the Greeks. They mocked at it, and the Jewish people of their time stumbled over it, says the scriptures. C.S. Lewis, that brilliant Oxford and Cambridge scholar, said what kept him from coming to Christ for years in his life was the cross. He could not understand the idea of the atonement. He could not understand the idea of atonement. But you see, it is not a cheap forgiveness. It is a forgiveness that recognizes sin is a mangling, it's a severance, it's a breaking, it's a rupturing. If I sin against you, I have done you wrong, and something is going to divide you from me. There's a fragmentation of the spirit that takes place. And that's why I think what is so marvelous is even on the cross, when Christ was hanging there as insolence was looking on and indifference and irreverence were looking on, he said something that is most intriguing to the theological or to the ordinary mind when he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? When he took the sin upon himself, for that moment it was almost as though even the Trinity was mangled for just that moment as the Father turned his face away from his Son. The without blemish Son of God, who because of his love took our sin and is willing to forgive you and me. E. Stanley Jones was that great Methodist missionary to India who was a personal friend of Mahatma Gandhi and Prime Minister Nehru. Gandhi spent a lot of time with Stanley Jones and respected him very greatly. And Dr. Stanley Jones, who's the author of many books, a veteran, a greatly admired man, told of how once he was witnessing to a Hindu government officer in India who struggled with his commitment to Christ, wanted to come to Christ, but could not understand the cross. And he says, because of the failure to understand the cross, I cannot make my commitment. See, he was struggling with his reincarnation philosophy. What most of us do not realize, that in reincarnation, you're paying. That's the whole theory of reincarnation. The karma cycle is going on, it's moving. You're paying, you're paying, you're paying with every reincarnation till you can shake it off into moksha and release. In nirvana, which is attained in Buddhism, you're paying through the transmigration, through the reincarnation process. In all of them, you pay. In the Islamic faith, you never know whether you will ever reach the heavens outside of martyrdom, which is some kind of a guarantee therein. But here it is, talking to a man who said, how can I get rid of this guilt and how can I get rid of this sin? But he couldn't understand the cross till he had lived a life of betrayal with his wife. And the guilt tormented him so much, he said to himself, I cannot keep this from my wife. I've got to go and tell her what I've done. And he sat this lovely wife of his youth down in their room and said, I'm going to have to tell you something, and it's going to crush you. I have betrayed you. And he spoke of his betrayal and his relationship with someone else illicitly. His wife just broke down and wept and wept and wept. And finally, after hours of sobbing, as she came and took the hand of her husband, saying, "I promised myself to you, and I love you, and I will not allow your betrayal to take away from me the opportunity to forgive and love you." And this man, it suddenly dawned on him what the cross was all about. It was love crucified by sin. Love crucified by sin. That's why the songwriter says, "What language shall I borrow to thank you, dearest friend, for this thy dying sorrow, thy pity without end? Oh, make me thine forever, and should I fainting be, Lord, let me never, never outlive my love for thee." How can it happen? Ingmar Bergman's play Wild Strawberries has this scene. A professor comes to a court of law, and he lifts his countenance up to the judge, and he says, "Your Honor, am I guilty?" And the judge says, "Yes, you're guilty." The professor says, "What am I guilty of?" And the judge says, "You're guilty of guilt." And the professor says, "Is that serious?" The judge says, "Very serious." "What am I guilty of?" "You're guilty of guilt." "Is that serious?" "Very serious." Just think about it. If all we are is guilty of guilt, guilty of guilt, guilty of guilt, and end up with neuroses and severed relationships, where do we go for restoration? But if I can say I'm guilty of sin, there is a Savior. The vertical dimension, immediately, the vertical dimension. When we were talking on this issue just a few weeks ago on a national radio program, we were talking about doubt, and the first telephone caller was a woman from some prison somewhere in Florida. A young woman, she didn't say what she and her husband had gotten involved in. They were both in prison, and she wept over the phone as she had two little children now, abandoned and left alone with her parents. Subsequently has written to me. The letter awaits even as I'm about to return for it. But here it is. She says, "What am I going to do with my past? What am I going to do with my past?" I'm not saying it absolves the prison term. I'm not saying it frees the law of the land completely from off your back. But I am saying this: it can free you within as you know you are forgiven, and the peace of God floods you from inside. For you know that which was a wrong against him, as David said, "Against thee only have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight, that thou mightest be justified when thou speakest and be clear when thou judgest." Have you heard this poem? "He came to my desk with a quivering lip." It's written by an elementary school teacher. "He came to my desk with a quivering lip. The lesson was done. Have you a new sheet for me, dear teacher? I've spoiled this one." I took his sheet all soiled and blotted, gave him a new one all unspotted, and into his tired heart I cried, "Do better now, my child." I went to the throne with a trembling heart. The day was done. "Have you a new day for me, dear master? I've spoiled this one." He took my day all soiled and blotted, gave me a new one all unspotted, and into my tired heart he cried, "Do better now, my child." Terry Anderson's poems. What he wrote when he was alone in the dark dungeons of Beirut. And one of those poems I read this afternoon is powerful. He says, "I used to cry at night, and my tormentor would hear my cries. He saw me in agony, saw me lonely, saw me quiet. And yet every day he would come to make sure my blindfold was still on, and then my chains were still snug so that I would not be able to escape. And he would talk to me about all of his philosophy. And then I would hear him go and kneel and pray outside, and his opening words were, 'O Allah, most merciful and compassionate, come back and tighten the chains and tighten the chains.'" He said, "And then I realized," listen folks, "I realized there was nothing I saw in him that I had not recognized in myself too." It's exactly what DeLorean said. When he sat during the testimony one day, listening to a man who lied one after another, giving false witness, he was a paid witness. He said the things he said were complete fabrications, totally untrue. And as the anger began to well up in myself, and I thought, "Why is he doing this? Why is he doing this?" Has he no conscience? Is that money all that is before him? And he's doing the unconscionable to gain that money and that power. He said, and then it dawned on me, I saw myself in him. I too had stopped at nothing so that my motor car company could become the greatest. And I was beginning to lie and cheat in the process. One of the greatest stories in the Old Testament is how Jacob cheated his brother Esau. He went to his father Isaac and stole the blessing. And the father was blind and he didn't see who it was. He just said, who are you? He says, I am Esau. And he says, but you don't sound like Esau. And Jacob was deceiving his dad, pretending to be Esau and lying, saying, I'm Esau, give me your blessing. And he gives it, receives the blessing, and he takes off. The years go by. Esau is angry, but over the years they've both matured. They're both going to meet now. But Jacob is afraid because he has smothered his guilt. He's been living in fear now and it's become unbearable. But the way he was living was unlivable. And what he was trying to smother was unjustifiable. He says, I've got to meet up with my brother. And as he's coming to meet up with his brother, a fascinating thing takes place. The Bible describes it as a wrestling with God. And he says to God, I will not let you go until you bless me. And what does God say to him? What is your name? The last time he'd been asked his name, he'd lied. And he says, my name is Jacob. God says, that's right. And you know what that means? It means a liar, a supplanter, and a cheat. Jacob, I will make of you a great nation. Woman, you have well spoken. The man you're living with is not your husband. You have admitted to me who you really are. Sir, how about it? Are you going to expel it by irreverence, smother it by pride, or conceal it by fear? The unlivability, the unjustifiability, and the unbearableness, when you come and surrender to his grace, you will find that he bore your sins. You are justified by his grace, and the life you can now live is the life of forgiveness, because guilt surrendered is forgivable. Here's the two-minute illustration that you love. Here's where I believe the problem is. You know, it's a nice thing to be born in one side of the world and live on the other side of the world. You can touch two cultures. You hope. When I was living in India, I heard this story. It's a beautiful one. Only the Eastern minds can create stories like this. Story of a little boy who had a lot of marbles, beautiful ones, and his sister who had a lot of candy. And one day he says to her, you know, I like that candy of yours and it's a lot of candy, but I have a lot of marbles. Can we make a trade? I'll give you all my marbles if you will give me all the candy. She goes back into her room, thinks about it. She said, well, I love those marbles. She says, all right, we'll make a deal. You give me all the marbles, I'll give you all the candy. She goes back to the room, takes all the candy, stacks it into the bag. He goes back into his room and sees these marbles, and he sees a handful of beauties. He says, how can I give that up? So he hides a few of his beauties under the pillow, takes the rest, puts it into a bag, and goes, and he makes the trade. She gives him the candy, he gives her the marbles. That night, she is sleeping soundly. He's wide awake. Do you know why? He cannot sleep. One question is haunting him. Did she give me all the candy? And guilt will continue to haunt until you have given him all your sin. And as John Donne says, how beautifully you have in the past, in the present, with the promise for the future. The cross is that promise to you and me. Bring your life to him and turn it over to him for his forgiveness.
What have you done with your guilt? Are you going to expel it by your irreverence, smother it with your pride, conceal it by your fear, or surrender it to God's grace and experience the stunning beauty of forgiveness? As you listened to the program and studied with Ravi, did you think of how helpful it would be to have an audio cassette copy of this message? Reviewing a cassette copy of a message that is as precise and involved as today's is always beneficial. Listening again at your convenience usually allows you to catch thoughts, nuances, and maybe even a major point missed the first time. As is true each week, Ravi's radio message is always available on audio cassette tape. Or you may be interested in ordering it along with the companion cassette that makes up the album Cries of the Heart. You may place your credit card order by calling our convenient toll-free automated order line 24 hours a day. If you listen in the United States, place your order by dialing 1-800-448-6766. That's 1-800-448-6766. And when you place your order, ask for your free copy of RZIM's current newsletter, Just Thinking. You will find Just Thinking an invaluable tool for understanding many of the issues we must face every day in this pluralistic society. And now a special announcement for all of you faithful listeners to the Let My People Think radio program. We're excited to announce the release of Dr. Ravi Zacharias' new book entitled Jesus Among Other Gods. In this book, Ravi contrasts the uniqueness and truth of Jesus Christ with the teachings of Islam, Hinduism, and Buddhism. Ravi looks at six vital questions that Jesus answered in a way that no other claimant to divine or prophetic status would have answered. It's our hope that the Christian and non-Christian alike will gain a clear understanding of what the differences are and why Christ claimed to be who he is. To learn more about Ravi's new book, Jesus Among Other Gods, call our convenient toll-free automated order line at 1-800-448-6766. That's 1-800-448-6766. Or visit our website at www.rzim.org. That's rzim.org. When you call or write, remember to request a complimentary copy of Ravi's current newsletter, Just Thinking. Address your envelope to RZIM, Post Office Box 921-939, Norcross, Georgia, 30010. Again, that address, RZIM, Post Office Box 921-939, Norcross, Georgia, 30010. If you listen in Canada, contact our office in Canada. That address is 2476 Argentia Road, Suite 203, Mississauga, Ontario, L5N6M1. That's RZIM 2476 Argentia Road, Suite 203, Mississauga, Ontario, L5N6M1. Please be sure to give us the call letters of the station when you write or call. Knowing which station you're listening to helps us evaluate the effectiveness of broadcasting in this area. Ravi Zacharias International Ministries of Atlanta, Georgia produces this program as a radio outreach for those who are interested in discovering and knowing the truth and the one who is the source of truth, because he is truth. Thank you.